Hey folks, welcome back to the Inner Circle podcast. This is Ben Greenfield.
And Jessica Greenfield.
And today we have got an interesting show for you because we've been getting lots of questions from people, both in the Inner Circle forum and also over email, about fluoride and whether it's good or bad for you and your kids. And as a matter of fact, this is kind of timely because just before dinner, Jessa, tell me about the article that you mentioned to me.
Oh, I got an article in my email, and basically it was on how the government is halving the amount of fluoride in our water systems and in the cities.
It's very interesting. So sit back and listen in because you are about to find out everything that you need to know to make an educated decision about fluoride. But we've also got a few other things that we're going to tell you about today.
Right.
And one of them is a recent Wall Street Journal article. And what was that article about?
On exercise and the amount and how it's causing the divorce rate to go up.
Yes, very interesting. So we'll talk about exercise and how you could avoid getting a divorce or ruining a relationship because of your exercise habits. And the other thing that we'll talk about is, on the topic of fluoride, what we do with our kids and their dental health to encourage them to have healthier teeth. And I figure we should probably just jump right into the important stuff and talk about that right now before we get into the down and dirty facts about fluoride. So, Jessa, how is it that you have been kind of helping our kids to focus more on their dental health?
Well, actually, it was in the beginning, our boys really despised getting their teeth brushed.
Hated it.
Yeah, it was a real battle. Anyways, so for Christmas in their stockings, I got them little mechanical, you know, the ones that vibrate. Toothbrushes. I got them a pair of those. And
for the record, they're 2.5. Well, they're almost 3 years old.
Yeah.
Not the toothbrushes, the kids.
Anyway, they love it, and now they love brushing their teeth. They think it's really exciting. And after we're done brushing their teeth, we let them brush their teeth. And then I don't know if you do this, but I let them brush my teeth.
Yeah.
And they tell me to open and smile and all those fun things that I always tell them to do. So
simple little vibrating toothbrushes. And as far as toothpastes, I know that you've done two different things. You don't do it anymore, but you used to make our own toothpaste. Tell me about what you did.
You can make your toothpaste very easily. You can basically just use straight up baking soda and just wet your toothbrush and dip it in. But that tastes pretty awful. I mean, I didn't mind doing it, but it is not the greatest taste, I'll admit. Another way you could do it is that you can do baking soda with a little bit of 3% hydrogen peroxide. And
that's like a tooth whitener, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But both of those are, actually.
Yeah.
You can either put a little bit of tea tree oil in there or some spearmint to make it taste a little better. Tea tree oil is really great because it's an antibacterial.
Now, for people who don't even know where to get tea tree oil or peppermint oil or like how potent that stuff is, where's the best place for them to start?
If you buy it in your local health food store, it's already been diluted, so that's a good place to start, is just buying
and
the
so
stuff.
You just put a few drops of that in with baking soda and
it doesn't
peroxide.
Take a lot. Yeah, honestly, for a small batch of toothpaste, I would only put in like 3 drops of tea tree oil, because if you put too much in it, it can be abrasive on your gums.
And how do you store it? Like, is it in a bottle by the side of the sink, or what's the best way to keep that stuff? Yeah, the toothpaste that you make.
Actually, I saw a really cool little contraption when I was earlier today when I was researching it, and you know those little piping tools that people use to make cakes with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They put it in
cake
there.
Decorators.
Yeah, and they just piped it out that way. We're missing one ingredient, though, for the toothpaste.
What's the one ingredient we're missing?
Glycerin.
Oh, glycerin.
Yes.
That's right.
Which makes it kind of pasty.
That's right. I was going to say, because you can't squeeze powder out of one of those cake decorators.
No, yeah.
Now, when we did it, I remember you making it with the glycerin, and we would just kind of dip our toothbrush into, I think you used an old shampoo bottle.
Yeah.
But then after that, you had, like, just a little powder canister that we kept beside the sink that
we dipped the toothbrush in. It just was easier for us. Mm-hmm. But like I said, a lot of people don't like the taste of just baking soda, and so that's why I've given
including the kids.
Yeah, the boys didn't like it very much, and so it just tastes better.
Yeah. Now I don't mind just dipping my toothbrush in a little baking soda and adding a drop of oil of oregano.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've done as well, because that's from the mint family.
That's also it's a pretty
potent, antiseptic, antibacterial. Now, how about the kids? Because we're using toothpaste for them now.
Yeah, I just went out and bought them toothpaste because they really didn't like the taste and figured I wasn't going to force it. So Desert Essence makes a fluoride-free tea tree oil toothpaste, and so does it's Janssen.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are the only two that I've been able to find.
And you just found those at the grocery store?
At the health food store. Okay. Tom's used to, and I actually started buying Tom's because I thought they still did fluoride free, but they don't anymore. So, they are not fluoride free.
Okay.
Y'all know.
Gotcha. So there's some of the ways that you can brush your teeth and also add that hydrogen peroxide in as a natural teeth whitener.
Yes.
Now, before we talk about why you'd even want to think about going fluoride free, did you have anything you wanted to add, Jessa, in terms of tooth care?
Well, yeah, since we're on the topic, I threw in a couple of natural tooth whitening things for y'all. And like I said, like we already said, hydrogen peroxide and baking soda are already tooth whiteners. So there's another good reason to use that as a toothpaste. Also, you can do some simple things like when you peel an orange, let the skin dry out for a little while, and then you take the white side of the peel and you rub it on your teeth, and that's like actually a tooth polisher.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That was cool. I did not know that.
Yes. And actually, strawberries also are a natural tooth whitener.
Well, how does that work? Strawberries turn your teeth red.
They just are.
like eating strawberries can help your teeth.
Yeah, this is actually an old remedy for whitening your teeth. And you can basically mash up strawberries and put them on your teeth and let it sit there for a couple of minutes. However, you do not want to just leave the sugar on your teeth because it is bad for your teeth eventually. So you do want to brush after you do this. So there's that option. And also, my favorite, apple cider vinegar, is actually a tooth whitener as well. You don't want to just put vinegar in your mouth because that is abrasive on your teeth. You want to mix it. You want to dilute it in some water, like 1 to 8, you know.
Yeah. And we actually recently did an hour-long video webinar for the Inner Circle, and you showed
apple cider vinegar.
A ton of things that I didn't know you could do with apple cider vinegar.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like a Bragg's apple cider vinegar is pretty.
Yeah, and actually,
cool.
Something I've been using recently, I mixed the apple cider vinegar and water, and I put a little bit of tea tree oil in there as well, which is also a natural tooth whitener. So,
very cool.
There's a couple things there for you, little tidbits.
All right. Well, do you want to talk a little bit about fluorine?
Sure.
Okay. So here's the deal with fluoride. The story of fluoride begins way back in 1924 when there was this German chemical manufacturing company, and it was called IG Farben. And they got a bunch of loans from all these American bankers and eventually merged their assets with some of these big American industrial companies, like specifically
big money people.
Henry Ford and American Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these corporations, eventually by the early 30s, had a bunch of subsidiaries and cooperative corporations over in Germany. Mm-hmm. And all of these assets in America were controlled by this company, IG Farben, and a bunch of the big American, kind of like the industrial the industrial leaders of America were on the board of directors of IG Farben, like the guy who was in charge of Ford and the president of Rockefeller Bank and the president of Standard Oil,
basically president of the biggest Bank of money Manhattan. Makers of
yeah.
the U.S.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing that was going on at the same time was that in 1939, mm-hmm. The American Aluminum Company, which is called Alcoa, and that mm-hmm. was the world's largest producer of sodium fluoride, yeah. which is a byproduct of producing aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And another company called the Dow Chemical Company transferred their technology to Germany. And at the same time, a lot of these companies that were making personal care products like Colgate and Kellogg and DuPont, mm-hmm. all of them signed in to this big cartel owned by this overseeing company, IG Farben, as well. So now we've got kind of sitting in the same basket, all these companies that are making personal care products,
yeah,
as well
as coming together.
The big aluminum company that's basic byproduct of producing aluminum is sodium fluoride.
Huge byproduct. Actually, there's so much they didn't know what to do with it.
Yep, exactly. And the interesting thing is that at the end of World War II, when the U.S. sent over their head research worker, whose name was Charles Perkins, they sent him over to take charge of a lot of these chemical plants in Germany that were owned by IG Farben. He was told by the German chemist that worked over there that what the German general staff had been doing, some of the Nazi
Are you
army,
about Nazi? Yeah.
Yeah, they were controlling populations in the areas that they would go through by mass medicating the drinking water with sodium fluoride, and they observed that actually made the prisoners more docile, and they found that it actually made them, and this was quoted, more stupid. It actually would lower their IQ and make them easier to take over and less likely to defend their freedom. And it's interesting because if you look at fluoride today, mm-hmm. it's one of the strongest antipsychotic substances that you can get your hands on, and it's in 25% of the major tranquilizers that are used. So it's not just toothpaste ingredient. Now, what happened was this whole idea that fluoride should be added to personal care products to prevent specifically dental caries or cavities
mm-hmm.
originated, again, at the same time in 1939 when a scientist who worked for Alcoa, this mm-hmm. company that was producing as part of its aluminum making the sodium fluoride byproduct or this toxic fluoride waste, he found, this head researcher that worked for this company, found that when they fluoridated lab rats, that it reduced cavity. Yeah, it reduced cavity in the lab rats. So he suggested that we may want to think about adding it to the U.S.'s water supply. And what happened then was a few years later,
mm-hmm.
one of the lawyers who worked for Alcoa was appointed the head of the U.S.'s Federal Security Agency.
Well, that makes it easy.
That put him in charge of the Public Health Service. So at that point, over the next 3 years, after he was appointed, 87 new American cities started fluoridating their water.
Interesting.
And all of the education and the research in terms of the effect of fluoride on the teeth was funded by aluminum manufacturing and the fertilizer and weapons industry.
That seems like a biased.
Well, it's one of those things where you're kind of in the pocket of the people who are making the money.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was that fluoride, which is kind of the major waste constituent in the manufacturing processes of all these things that were going on, explosives and fertilizers and everything else, it was considered a toxic, hazardous waste.
Mm-hmm.
But they found that because it would reduce the incidence of cavities, or at least it did so in this aluminum company-funded lab rat study, that they could get it added to the water. And it turned into a multi-billion-dollar pharmaceutical and personal care products industry.
Adding
fluoride. And the big thing was that, you know, because they got doctors on board to endorse fluoridation, and these doctors really weren't familiar with some of the underlying companies behind the research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people listen to doctors. When a doctor gets on TV and tells you that fluoride is going to be good for your teeth, then
somebody in a lab coat tells you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the whole idea behind the history of fluoride. And despite a lot of evidence that I'll tell you about in a minute that fluoride could be harmful to public health, a lot of health agencies and big dental and medical organizations, I hope there's no dentists listening to this because they're going to hate us now, but including the American Dental Association,
this is the history, people.
They continue to promote fluoride. And, you know, there are things like the article that came out today where people are becoming more and more aware and researchers and the medical community is becoming more and more aware that fluoride may not be the healthiest thing. But regardless, it's actually impossible for water companies to get sued or to undergo any civil or criminal hearing as a result of adding fluoride to public water supplies. And that's because of a water act that was passed in 2003. So as far as all these studies and the idea of water fluoridation, basically the idea is that it's widely regarded as a way to improve public health, and it's supposed to strengthen the enamel of the teeth and prevent decay and cavities and tooth loss. And the American Medical Association endorsed this idea in the 50s, and so did the American Dental Association. But there's a ton of research out now that kind of makes fluoride a little bit more unsure in terms of its health. So, for example, fluoride could increase bone density, according to research, but it doesn't decrease fracture risk. And it could actually weaken the bones, according to some recent studies.
And calcify ligaments.
Exactly. Fluoride in large amounts, this is one of the reasons you're really not supposed to give it to kids, especially in large amounts, is it can actually cause something called fluorosis, which is a staining of the teeth. And that's really not like something's going to mess up your kids, but it doesn't look nice.
It basically causes the enamel to become porous.
Yeah, but it can lightly change the color.
Yeah, it'll change the color, but I mean when your teeth are porous, it means it can take in like sugar more.
Right,
and it's more susceptible to cavities,
and you have a significantly higher rate of that happening if fluoride supplements are used in the first 6 months of a baby's life. So the other thing is that some studies have found that fluoride could affect dietary allergies, protein digestion, and food intolerance. And has been linked to symptoms of stomach pain and indigestion. I've got a huge list of research studies sitting in front of me that back this data up. So that means that a lot of people could be having like digestive problems just from fluoride. Now, granted, the type of fluoride that's added to water supplies is like a low-grade fluoride. And it's worse for you. Some of the stuff added to toothpaste is like pharmaceutical-grade fluoride.
The stuff in the water has not actually been tested on animals or humans at all.
Right, but the stuff in toothpaste has.
The stuff in toothpaste has. Yeah. It's pharmaceutical.
So, you know, if you had to choose, the toothpaste is going to be better than the water. Mm-hmm. But there's other studies that suggest it could damage joints, connective tissue, your brain.
Can I say something on that?
Yeah.
I was actually watching a video of a man who had a bunch of livestock in Washington State, where we're from, actually. And then a aluminum plant was put up like 10 miles away from him. And he was noticing that his cows were becoming lame. Their teeth were extremely sensitive. And I saw some of these videos. These cows suck water. They don't lap up water like a dog. Mm-hmm. Because these cows' teeth were so sensitive from the fluoride coming from the aluminum plant, they were like licking it up so the water would warm up before it would come into their mouth. That's how raw their teeth were. They're completely lame because of calcification in their ligaments, and they actually won a lot. They filed a lawsuit against this aluminum company and won. They won close to $200,000 in losses because this stuff really does happen.
Well, it's one of the reasons that you should even be careful just doing something like swallowing your toothpaste, because the current recommendations for fluoride dosage are assumed to be the same for everybody, like infants all the way up to adults and the elderly.
Which is ridiculous. An infant is like...
Exactly.
An eighth of your size.
Don't even take into account what you could be getting from like soft drinks and juices and soups and pharmaceuticals as well. So, you know, lots of things, lots of medications,
produce,
lots
people,
of supplements have
fluoride.
Yeah. So you could be looking at some bone damage, some nervous system damage, some thyroid damage, some gut damage. So I think, in my opinion, the best scenario would be to try and limit the amount of fluoride that you're getting in. So one of the things that you could do is you could just use like a water filter in your home that filters the water. Yes. Now, our water here in Spokane actually isn't fluoridated.
No.
But we have a carbon water filter that filters most of the major potential toxins and chemicals and chlorines that could get into our water.
Mm-hmm.
You could also use like called a reverse osmosis filtration. And a lot of those will remove fluoride as well. Like a Brita filter or a pure water filter, the kind that you fill and put in your refrigerator, those don't filter out fluoride.
I didn't think so. I was like, I don't think that does.
Boiling water doesn't do anything, and neither does freezing it for that matter.
Probably just preserves it.
Yeah, and there's some other things that have fluoride in them, like chewing tobacco has fluoride, and a lot of antidepressants and medications for osteoporosis contain fluorine. Yeah. So if you really wanted to cut fluoride out,
produce.
You just start reading labels. Yeah, look for fluorine.
Well, and the reason I'm saying that is you should be careful about what you're feeding your small children because those have actually a high level of fluoride in them because it's an insecticide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we don't want to like get on this big scare campaign about fluoride, but just be smart. Start off by thinking about getting a water filter and not swallowing your toothpaste. Just start as simple as that.
Yeah.
And then if you really want to get a little bit more intensive, just start making your own toothpaste. And
it is available.
Yeah, using a good water filter or buying, fluoride-free toothpaste. And then if you really, really want to get on board, go to a website like fluoridealert.org. And find out more about mm-hmm. how you could participate in like an anti-fluoridation campaign. And right. for those of you who are inside our inner circle, we're going to give you a bunch of videos too that talk a little bit more about this inside the inner circle and the mm-hmm. Body Transformation Club. So if you want to get on board and find out more about that, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/innercircle. So that's the deal on fluoride. If you are part of the inner circle, ask us questions on the forum. You can also leave a comment on the show notes for this blog. Now, let's shift focus 180 degrees, wander in a completely different category, and talk about this recent article that came out that's called A Workout Ate My Marriage.
I've seen this happen, several times.
This article talks about specifically endurance athletes. That's who they really focus on.
Yeah.
And about how a lot of times it like starts as this innocent bit of exercise and turns into an exercise addiction.
Okay, isn't exercise, you were telling me, I think it was you, somebody was telling me that exercising is actually more addictive than, like, cigarettes?
it stimulates the same receptors as, cocaine, nicotine, those type of things do. So,
but it's pretty highly addictive, isn't it?
It's highly, highly addictive, and specifically chronic repetitive motion exercise, such as endurance exercise, running on a treadmill.
Runner's high.
Think of the mouse running on the wheel. And the story goes over these couples, and specifically an Arizona psychologist.
Kind of tragic in there.
Yeah, the psychologist calls it divorce by triathlon. Just because, there's these guys that are getting off work and going home and getting on their indoor trainer for 3 hours and, doing 20-mile runs on the weekends. And
imagine yourself. You used to wake up with your partner next to you, and now you don't anymore. You used to eat dinner with your partner, and now you don't anymore. It's
right.
There's a lot of things that, people give up for.
Right. And so we just wanted to talk a little bit because Jess and I both, we do triathlons and races mm-hmm. and we work out a lot and we're both playing tennis now. And, we work out a lot, but I would say that we have a very healthy relationship and we do spend a lot of time together. So
a lot of time.
Yeah.
Actually.
I get sick of you sometimes.
Gosh, wouldn't you just leave the house?
So I'm going to ride my bike now. But some of the things that we do. First of all, and this is probably where I kind of have an advantage, first thing you have to understand is that more is not better.
Yes.
And especially when it comes to something like Ironman triathlon and the type of personalities that are drawn to things like marathons mm-hmm. or triathlons, it's the same personality that really wants to know that you can do it mm-hmm. before the actual race. Like, know that you can run 26 miles.
Which means
miles
you gotta go,
bike.
Do out the 26 and bike the whole
that's
thing.
That's not the idea. That's not the type of training that is necessary for aerobic events. Study after study has shown that by simply doing high-intensity interval training and shorter, more intense efforts,
that's what I do.
You can get the same results. Yeah, Jessa is the girl who...
maybe trains an hour.
She'll
a
go
day.
Out there and she'll kick the butts of a lot of the other girls that she goes running with, but it's because she'll hop on the treadmill and chug along at 9.0 or 10.0 for 2 to 4 minute intervals. And, you know, whereas you'll get a lot of people, I know, going out, you know, hopping on the treadmill for
9, 10 hours, yeah.
Yeah, and doing intense intervals is probably one of the best ways to get away from this long junk training. And I realize that it may take a complete reinvention. Like, if you're the type of person who looks at your clock at the end of the day, and if you haven't gotten in your 2 hours or your 2.5 hours or your 3 hours of exercise, you feel like you haven't accomplished something, you just have to reinvent the lens that you're looking through when it comes to something like preparing for an event. It really does not take the amount of time that a lot of people are putting into it. Over on my Facebook page for the Triathlon Dominator, I recently copied and pasted the average training time of
Ironman. 4 hours a day?
I could probably pull it up here and tell you, but the average training time in terms of like volume per week was 232 miles of biking per week, 7 miles of swimming per week, and 48 miles of running per week. Now, I have never come close to doing even like 60% of that in any week. And I like to think that I do decent in Ironman triathlon.
You do,
and it's not just because I eat healthy or I take care of my body or whatever. I'm naturally lean. It's because the quality of the training is very high. So focus on the quality of your training.
And then honestly, I would say, I almost think training hard for short periods of time is harder.
Yeah, it can be harder, but it also, it gets you fitter faster. Now, the other thing that I would personally say is be flexible. Like, there's a lot of times where if I have a slot open, say between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm really tempted to go and get my workout in, sometimes I won't because I find out that Jessa is going to work out from 5 to 6 p.m. Because if I put that off, then we can go work out together. And even if we're not doing the same workout, we're in the car together, driving to the gym, or we're getting ready together. And so you still feel like this kind of togetherness.
To
we flirt at the gym. But, you know, feeling like, you know, having a spouse or kids along with the workout is going to be annoying is something that can very quickly lead to this whole divorce by triathlon thing. You have to be willing to be able to put up with, you know, checking the kids into kid care and doing some of the things that involve keeping the family a part of your workout.
Well, and it's not even, you don't even need a gym that has, I mean, like in the summer months, I run with my kids.
Yeah.
And eventually I foresee them taking their bikes and biking beside me when I run. And, you know, I think it's very healthy for your kids to see you working out and think that it's normal and that it's something that happens every day.
Yeah, we talked about that in another podcast. I think we talked about that in Inner Circle podcast number 5. But the last thing that I would encourage you to do is basically reframe your idea of what amount of exercise is normal and healthy. And think about the fact that you can really go out and exercise hard for an hour and then maybe throw in a long session every now and again on the weekend and stay in very, very good shape and be able to do things like marathons and Ironman triathlons. And folks, I'm not just pulling this out my butt. I've trained hundreds of athletes using these methods and they go out and do great and they don't have any regrets about not spending time with their family or not seeing their kids. So just think about that and realize that you may need to reinvent your idea of what is normal and healthy when it comes to exercise. So
agreed.
That's what I have to say. Well, we've gone on for quite some time. I think this is going to be a long episode.
Sorry.
So we will shut up now. But we will play a special message for you at the end of this podcast. We'd encourage you to listen in and go check out the Inner Circle. We're having a ton of fun with it. Our next live video webinar is going to take place at the end of February, if you're listening to this podcast when it comes out. And so if you want to get in and get access to that video, and we've got dozens of videos and recipes and workouts, and I think we got close to 100 different forum threads going now. It's a blast, and it's the best $17 a month you are ever going to spend on your health, your exercise, and your lifestyle. So check it out. And until next time, this is Ben Greenfield.
Jessa.
Signing out. The Inner Circle.
Later.
Finally, a solution for healthy living that actually makes sense. Ben Greenfield and his wife Jessa have cracked the code on healthy living and revealed their entire system inside the Ben Greenfield Fitness Inner Circle, where you'll get instant access to 24/7 forum interaction with Ben and Jessa, a live monthly webinar, meal plans, videos, Ben's Body Transformation Club archives, and much, much more. If you or your family want to learn how to achieve the ultimate healthy lifestyle on a budget, then the Ben Greenfield Fitness Inner Circle is for you. Get 4 free videos to get you started and full access to the Inner Circle at bengreenfieldfitness.com/innercircle. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/innercircle. We'll see you inside.